Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today, the meat and potatoes of the show is going to be an excellent interview I did on Milan, a deep dive with our friend Daniele Mazzanti from Vox to Box Podcast. You'll hear that at the end. So you'll get a big dose of Milan there since it's Friday and there is Calcio this weekend. We, of course, have 1,000 names on deck and we have a special part of the podcast for our patrons as usual. But before we get to that, I am joined, of course, by producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, a couple of things I wanted to catch up with you on is let's start by talking about the legacy of this Inter Scudetto. I know they haven't clinched it, but at this point, it's completely inevitable. And I have to ask you this, and maybe there are some parallels to Conte winning the Premier League with Chelsea. So I want to ask you this. Inter, obviously, on a great run. They are breezing through the title. But how much do you think is going to be remembered, both short-term, long-term, like maybe when they clinch it? How much do you think are people going to harp on the fact that they did it, A, in part because they were eliminated from the group stage in the Champions League, a group that they should have been able to get out of. So there's that. Then there is this perception that they are a very defensive team that just tries to set up a great counter, so maybe not the most exciting team to watch. And then I would say the third thing that if you wanted to be, if you will, a detractor of giving credit to Inter is pointing out that Juve has been on the decline for 2 years now, and the gamble of going with Pirlo hasn't worked out, at least so far. So what do you make of that? Do you think people are going to harp a lot on this, or are people going to say, you know what, let's just give credit to Inter. They're on a great run. They've been clearly the best team in Serie A.
Yeah, I kind of hope it's the latter, to be honest. I hope people just give them the credit, because I hear these arguments, and I'll quickly go through them, but I'll just give my answer first, that I don't think there really should be an asterisk. I don't think it should be tainted. I don't think that a few years from now anyone should look at it as any different, except for maybe the no fans part, you know, but that's not Inter's fault. That's not Inter's fault at all. Yeah. So maybe it'll feel different to some because there were no fans, but that's actually the only acceptable thing I really hear where Inter's title may be different. But then again,
yeah, and I like that. Sorry to interject. Yeah. It's the no fans, crazy schedule, which with no CL kind of. So I think with its fans and the COVID, it's a really good point that you made there.
Yeah, and like I was going to say, I don't think it's why Inter are winning or anything like that. It's not like one team has fans and the rest don't. It's just obviously the one difference. So now to jump into maybe the reasons you gave as to why some could chip away at this Scudetto for Inter, let's work backwards. The last one you said, well, maybe it won't count as much because Juve have been declining and Pirlo obviously has not been a consistently good manager with the team, and obviously the players haven't been consistently good enough either. But you know what, David? How often does a team end the reign of another team's legacy and dynasty? How often do they end it when that other team who's been the dynasty is still at their top? Very rarely. Usually you do have to have that dynasty fall a little bit in order for their reign to end. So I think it's only natural that Juve were eventually going to not be as good. And it was up to another team, and in this case a few teams, but it was up to another team to just grab the bull by the horns and make sure that that team wouldn't win this time on their fall from grace, if you will. Because Juve still are good enough where, I know they only have 59 points right now, but they still are good enough where if Inter and AC Milan were having the seasons that they were having a few seasons ago, well, then Juve could still win the Scudetto, if you know what I mean. So it's only natural that this team who's winning Scudetto after Scudetto after Scudetto is going to fall a little bit because they have their own standards. They obviously aren't going to keep the same manager. They are then trying to win the next thing, which is the Champions League. So I really don't at all discredit Inter, if they're about to win this, for Juve falling, because that's going to happen. And guess what? Some teams don't take advantage of that. So credit to Inter for taking advantage of that. And by the way, I mean, they're 12 points ahead. So, you know, if they just squeaked by, then maybe it'd be a little different. Then I'd be like, wow, you barely could beat that really, really beat up and poor Juve.
Maybe. Yeah.
But they're dominating right now. So I can't really at all use that against Inter. And then the whole thing about, well, you know, the early exit from the Champions League and stuff like that. Fine. But you know what? That happens with plenty of teams every season or two when they win the league. And sometimes we know it is easier to have a complete season in your league if maybe you're not in as many competitions. So it happens. Listen, if it happened consistently where Inter then themselves started winning Scudettos, but part of the key was they were getting bounced out of the Champions League every year really early, then I would be like, wait a minute, this is a little cheap here because they're now just whittling it down to one competition. But first of all, what club would continuously do that on purpose? And once again, it's more of a one-off here. It's just this season where they're about to win the Scudetto, and we can use that to reference. But it happens. I don't think that should really take away from how Inter's playing. Overall, just to kind of wrap my answer up here, Inter's been too good for me to want to chip away at what they're accomplishing. And you know, David, I can get petty if Antonio Conte is in the mix here. I will certainly take my chips at him if I feel like they're justified. But nah, I mean, guess what? He really delivered on what many maybe thought he could deliver on when we saw the team that he was building last summer. We all kind of were like, whoa, this feels like an Antonio Conte team. Could he actually end Juve's Scudetto reign? And we all said it, but he's doing it, David. And I feel like sometimes people don't get enough credit when they actually do something that was theorized beforehand. So we all kind of theorized Conte could do it. But now that he's actually doing it, some are looking for ways to chip away at it or make it seem less special because, like you mentioned, Juve have not been Juve. But I think they deserve full credit. Full credit. And if anything, the schedule is still tough on everyone. And to be this consistently good to grind out results, we know Conte's teams can grind out results. But still, they've been a really, really damn good team. So I'm not taking anything away from it. But I do hear, at least I hear what you're saying, as if you want to be a good debater and you want to debate against Inter, you can use those things. I'm not saying you can't, but I personally reject them. So yeah, all credit to Inter as of right now. That's my answer, David. What about you?
Well said, Alex. Very well said. Yeah, you hit on basically almost everything that I was going to say. So I'll say this about the Champions League early exit. I think that in a way probably says more about Conte than it says about Inter, because now Conte, more and more, there is this perception that he can win, but he needs to be in just one competition and just worry about that. And listen, winning a title is a big deal. So I think it almost becomes like, you know, too big of a downside to say, oh, you can't do it if you're in multiple competitions. So I think the fact that they're out of the Champions League, had it been a different manager, I think we would look at it differently. But Conte just has this thing, like he wanted Juve the first time they weren't in the Champions League. Same with Chelsea, they weren't in Europe. So he kind of started the cycle that way. And, you know, he hasn't been particularly good in European competitions. Maybe not as bad as people make him out to be, but certainly not good. I wouldn't argue that. So I think if you want to take that aspect of chipping away at the credit at Inter, I think you chalk it up more to Conte. As far as the defensive style, I think there is something to that. But the counter to that is that right now Inter is tied with Atalanta for most goals scored in Serie A. Now, my guess is that at the end of the season, Atalanta is going to have more goals than Inter. But I tend to always be optimistic about Atalanta. But still, Inter are going to end up with, you know, definitely one of probably the second best offense in Serie A for the season. And hey, maybe I'm too optimistic about Atalanta. They have the best attack. So you can counter it that way. And the Pirlo thing, you said it well. Like, teams at some point, a cycle does end. And, you know, there's a famous quote from a bad movie in the 80s, Cocktail, that is like, if things didn't end badly, they wouldn't end at all. And I always keep thinking about that that, yeah, okay, it didn't work out with Pirlo. That's kind of why it's ending. And a lot of times it is that way, but Juve really has been on the decline for a few years. And I think Inter has really done a lot of things well. In a lot of ways, it's not surprising that Marotta, who was one of the architects of the Juve under Conte, a lot of similarities there. And I will say that, you know, there's a lot of debates on Juve missing Allegri, but I think you can make a great case on them really missing Marotta, maybe just as much or maybe potentially even more. You know, I really enjoyed covering Marotta and when he was at Juve. I thought he was one of the most underrated directors in Serie A that I've been following, and I've been following the league for over 30 years. I was like, yeah, this guy isn't flashy and fun and interesting, like say like someone like Moggi and Galliani, but you know, you look at the track record and what he's done. So to me, I think a lot of Marotta on this Scudetto. And I do think that Conte said it best recently. It's a quote from 2013 that basically at the end of the day, those who win get to write history, and everyone else has to say is just kind of barroom talk. It's just like, okay, yeah, you can chip away at this Inter thing, but it will be remembered that they ended Juve Scudetto streak. As you mentioned, it is a very large point gap, and I think that is a great point that you made there, is that if the gap in points kind of remains kind of like this, let's say Inter clinches the Scudetto 3-4 games before the end of the season, then yeah, it's a very decisive win there. And I do think they are a very good team. Like Allegri in a recent interview with Sky Sports said that this Inter as is, you know, should be able to get to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and maybe with a little luck, get a little bit further. And I do agree with that. And I'm very interested, assuming there isn't any crazy things with the ownership at Inter, that next season, I'm very curious to see how they compete in Europe. And at that point, I think Conte has to, you know, show that he can do both competitions. But before we get to 1,000 names, Alex, I want to ask you two quick things on transfers. So obviously we had Dybala with a great goal against Napoli, much needed for Juve, but it does feel almost inevitable that he'll be on his way out, for partly for financial reasons. I would say it's much more likely than not that he's involved in like a Pjanic Artur like swap than staying at Juve. So I have to ask you, Alex, I had a Chelsea fan pitch me this idea of a swap Ziyech for Dybala, which I have to say is interesting, although Juve is already frustrated with Dybala, doesn't really have a clear position, and I think Ziyech is the epitome of that. But just that made me think, is there an appetite, in your opinion? I'm curious both at the club level or at the fan level for Dybala, because he's, from what I understand, he really doesn't want to be a side guy on a team that has, like, maybe at PSG with Mbappé and Neymar, or play alongside Messi now. And, you know, I know Chelsea has a lot of young players, and I wouldn't say he'd be the biggest star, but it's not like there's like a huge, huge name there. So maybe there's a match there. Do you think there's appetite both at the fan level and maybe at the club level? And keep in mind, Juve and Chelsea do have a very good relationship, and to do these swaps, you kind of need that for sure. So do you see anything to this? And do you think Dybala is still rated pretty highly by Chelsea fans?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'll say, first off, me personally, I have not heard anything about Chelsea and Dybala. But to answer the question, I kind of hate that I'm at this point with Dybala. I would actually say no overall to Dybala at Chelsea. And I hate that I'm saying that, because overall, I think I've been a defender of him when he's had his off seasons. We've seen how talented he is. I like the guy. I like him. And when Dybala is playing well, he's a beautiful footballer to watch. He really, really is. And I think it's such a shame that we've missed some seasons from Dybala, you could say, here in his 20s, that maybe if he was in the right situation and playing a lot, he could have produced a heck of a lot more moments. So he almost is a player that I attach what if to a little bit. I'm not saying he hasn't already had really good seasons in Serie A, but I feel like he probably could have had more by now. But he's been on a team where the standard's been so high at Juve, and we know David, Dybala is a very interesting and unique player, and he's not the easiest player to fit in just any formation. So that obviously impacts my answer here. The reason why I say no to Dybala for the current Chelsea, even if it's a swap with Ziyech, is Chelsea are at the point now where they have a lot of good attackers. Like, they have a lot of attackers that a lot of other clubs would pay a decent amount of money for. Between, I know Kai Havertz and Werner are struggling right now, but especially Kai. Obviously, if Kai was available, still many teams would line up. You got Kai, and you got Timo Werner, and you got Hakim Ziyech, and you got Christian Pulisic, who barely starts these days. You have Callum Hudson-Odoi, you have Tammy Abraham, you have Olivier Giroud. Of course, Mason Mount's been playing more forward, and he's been absolutely phenomenal. So you have all of these players. And if you add Dybala in, it's just another player that, yeah, on his day, on paper, looks really good. But especially with Tuchel now in and playing more of a 3-4-3, but you don't know what he's going to do next season. And the fact that Chelsea always have different managers anyway, who knows what the formation is. So it's really hard to pencil in Dybala concretely. And like you said, he probably wants to be a regular where he goes next. And it's really tough for Chelsea at this point to promise anyone that, except for maybe a Mason Mount and a few other players. So I see Dybala as so much different than Chelsea acquiring someone like Lukaku or Haaland, where you acquire Lukaku or Haaland, they're your starting striker. No doubt about it, they're your starting striker. With Dybala, you can't use that same certainty. So it has really nothing against Dybala, but just, I mean, to be a good club, you can't just acquire players because they're sexy names. You have to actually acquire players that you have plans for. And I just don't really know if Chelsea would have a concrete plan for Paulo Dybala. So I would also want what's best for him. And I'm not sure a move to Chelsea would be best for him. I think he does need to go somewhere where they can say to him, hey, you're our false nine. You're our striker in a two. You're our center forward. You're our cam, if you will. And you're going to get the majority of the starts here. You're going to get 30-plus league starts. And I don't even know if Chelsea could say that to someone like him. Whereas, once again, if it's Lukaku or Haaland, yeah, we miss someone like that. Just a no-nonsense number nine. So I hate that I'm here, David. He's only 27. So once again, for his sake, I hope that he kind of finds his home and he finds it quick, whether it's at Juve or it's somewhere else. Because I think football in general could benefit from Paulo Dybala being Paulo Dybala. It was only a handful of years ago people were shouting Messi's name after Dybala when he had great games. But now for Chelsea, I just don't think it's specifically the right fit. So yeah, that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah. No, I remember we had Rory Smith on like years ago, and this is at the time that that Dybala was as good a candidate to kind of be the next, you know, guy to win a Ballon d'Or off those guys after Ronaldo and Messi, and it certainly hasn't worked out that way. And a very, very fascinating to see what happens there. So before we get the thousand name real fast, last week we talked about Chelsea potentially being interested in Donnarumma. A week has passed. There doesn't seem to be too much movement on an extension with Milan. I still think ultimately that's what happens. But do you feel more or less confident that there could be something happening with Chelsea and Donnarumma?
I mean, not much different than last week. But if I had to move the needle at all, backwards or frontwards, I know it would be forwards, but just allow it. Frontwards sounded good. I would say maybe a skosh more frontwards, because it has less to do with how Mendy's doing. Overall, he's doing really, really well. I know he conceded 5 to West Brom on Saturday, but we were down a man. That game was an absolute S show. It was just a mess, and it was one of those that hopefully was a blip on the radar. And then Mendy was terrific the other night in the Champions League. Terrific. So I still just think it has to do with the fact that the ongoing talks with Raiola have been so far pretty good from what I've heard. And you take that with a grain of salt, but sounds like Chelsea are definitely speaking to him in a better manner and vice versa than maybe what used to happen. Obviously, Haaland is a huge reason behind that, but I don't think Chelsea are necessarily looking at Donnarumma's chopped liver. Like, oh, while we're here talking to you about Haaland, we'll just ask you about Donnarumma. No, I mean, they obviously know the situations of Haaland and Donnarumma are vastly different. And yeah, I still think personally they're sniffing around it and trying to see if they could work something out for Donnarumma. And it's one of those situations where if you're Mendy, this is a perfect reminder to everyone out there, including Mendy, that damn, it's a cutthroat business.
It is.
So it's really a situation where, David, I think in any other case, Mendy, no question, is the number one next season for Chelsea. And then they just have to worry about getting a number two, because I think Kepa will move on in some way, shape, or form. Mendy, of course, does have African Cup of Nations next season, which is now back in the season, so players will miss time. So if it wasn't Donnarumma in the picture, Chelsea would definitely just be looking at a solid number two. But with Donnarumma in the picture, in a very unique and rare scenario, where, yes, you're theorizing that maybe when push comes to shove, he will stay at Milan. But if he doesn't, and he really becomes a free agent and everything, Chelsea are going to feel compelled, David. They're going to feel compelled to try their hardest for that, because the age difference between Donnarumma and Mendy is still significant. And I think I said it on the last episode, but there is kind of thought that at least for a season, Mendy could be okay being a number two. I know he's been tremendous this season, but you got to remember, Mendy's roots are unique. They're like Sarri's roots, right? Where he had a very interesting career. I mean, he was basically out of football. He wasn't one of these wunderkinds or anything like that. So maybe he could handle being a number two. So yeah, I'm not saying I've really changed one way or the other since last week, but I certainly haven't been scared off the idea that Chelsea won't get Donnarumma. If anything, maybe I think it's even a bit more likely, but still very much up in the air for sure.
Yeah, my guess is, and look, because I really think Donnarumma wants to stay at Milan, that more than anything, Mino's trying to get a huge offer to say, Milan, hey, I have this, and maybe Milan blank, maybe they don't, and maybe it gets to the point that Donnarumma's like, yeah, the money really is different, and who knows? Like, to me, another factor would be if Milan continue to struggle and it becomes more in doubt if they make the Champions League or not. To me, at that point, if Donnarumma's like, geez, are we going to be consistently a Champions League team and I have this big offer from Chelsea, maybe he starts thinking about it. So I'll say this. I think time isn't really per se on Milan's side, because it's more likely that the situation could get worse with Mino having a big offer in hand, and B, Milan's situation and the standings getting worse. But I'll still say it. Maybe 2 weeks ago, I would have said I would have been absolutely shocked if Donnarumma left Milan. Now I will say, you know, pretty shocked. Like, shocked, but not, like, totally out of the blue. So interesting stuff. We'll keep an eye on this. So now let's get to some calcio on the pitch. 1,000 names send me the usual three game picks for games coming up this weekend. First up, Napoli traveling to Genova to face Sampdoria. 1,000 has Napoli winning 3-0, braced by Insigne, goal by Koulibaly. He says that Gattuso is going to make up for the loss in Turin against Juve by taking down old man Ranieri. He says Mario Rui and Di Lorenzo are going to look like Roberto Carlos and Cafu. He says Bakayoko is going to show a lot of quality, and Ospina is fantastic. So I think 1,000 names, who is based in Napoli, is drinking the Kool-Aid down there. In Italian, Samp Napoli 0-3, Insigne doppietta, Koulibaly, Gattuso riscatta la sconfitta di Torino, abbattendo il vecchio Ranieri, Mario Rui e Di Lorenzo come Roberto Carlos e Cafu. Quanta qualità by Kayoko, Ospina formidabile. Yeah, that loss to Juve was tough for Napoli. That was a huge win for Juve on Wednesday. They really needed that. I do think Napoli have been playing well. Somebody are, you know, they're I'm not going to say they have nothing to play for the rest of the season, but kind of. So I'm going to go Napoli win 1-0, and I'll go goal by – I'm going to give Osimhen a goal. He could really use one. Then we have Milan heading to Parma. And Parma, you know, they've been a little bit unlucky, but they are really on their way down to Serie B. 1,000 has Milan winning 3-0 with a hat trick by Ibrahimovic. The comment is Zlatan is going to celebrate his upcoming extension by giving three punches to Ronaldo and proving that he is the best of the two. And he says Tonali is going to have a great game. In Italian, Parma Milan 0-3, tripletta Ibrahimovic, Zlatan festeggia il rinnovo contro Schiaffi e Ronaldo, il più forte è sempre lui, Tonali incanta. Last up, Juve traveling, the hosting Genoa in Turin, 1,000 has it 1-1, goals by Chiesa and Badelj. He says Ballardini is going to stop Pirlo with Catenaccio. He says Juve being out of the Champions League could be a reality. And that Allegri's going to have another cup of coffee with Agnelli. This is something Pirlo was asked about on Tuesday, that, you know, he's like, yeah, Allegri and Agnelli going out for coffee, no big deal. They're friends. It's like me going out to dinner with Maldini. That sounds like the famous last words when you leave your wife or your girlfriend around someone and it doesn't go great. Watch out for that guy. So I'm going to go. Actually, I didn't make my pick for Parma-Milan. I'm going to go Milan 1-0. They need a win. I'll give Ibra a goal. Juve Genoa 1-1. I'm going to go Juve win. I'm going to go goal by Morata and Dybala. I'll do it 2-0. So thank you, Thousand. So before we get to Daniele Mazzanti, available to all, long deep dive on Milan. I really enjoyed it. That was a little fun. Let's get to our patrons. So just to plug what we've been doing recently there, we have monthly guests. We have Napoli Outsiders coming back next month. I also hired Francesco to look back at the history of calcio. We did our first podcast yesterday on Fantasisti for Patreon. Was awesome. We got great feedback on that. You know, we're going to be doing some really good ones there. So with him, we'll look a little bit more at the history of calcio, and with Napoli Outsider, we'll keep it more current. So those are going to be special interviews available on Patreon monthly. And, you know, we also have articles. This up right now, I'm looking at the players that can fetch the biggest plusvalenza in Serie A. Okay, it's bad. I was just catching up with my good friend Daniele Mazzanti. I hadn't been on for a while to talk about Milan. I remember I had tried to bring him on right around the derby, but he was too nervous. And then now with scheduling, I'm finally able to get him back on. He's been on quite a few times. For those not familiar with him, he is based in Milano, and he is one of the hosts of my favorite calcio podcast, and it's in Italian, Vox to Box. Really awesome, awesome show. Comes out on Mondays. They are looking to expand that show. So if you're learning Italian, if you know Italian and you want more calcio, check that out. But it's great to have Daniele here on loan from that. So bentornato to Calcioland, Daniele. Always a pleasure to chat Milan with you.
Thank you, David. Thank you for your kind words and thank you for having me. And yes, I'm just too Italian and too emotional about football. So that's a pity, but it's the way that we are. So for us, football is more like a religion than a sport. So I have to be honest, I'm too emotional about it. So after the derby, it was like a bad time for me.
Yeah, no, great stuff. So listen, I have to say, you have always been very cautious with Milan. I've had you on many times throughout the season, and not once did you really think Milan was a legitimate contender for the Scudetto. You've told me twice that you would have signed in blood for a top four finish. So Milan has definitely struggled quite a bit since I last spoke to you. If you had to put it on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most confident, how do you feel about Milan's chances of finishing in the top four?
So I'm not optimistic guy, I have to say, and I say I'm 7 on 10 confident about the AC Milan, the qualification up for the Champions League for the next year, basically because it would be a tragedy for us after being at the top of the league for like 20, 21 games or stuff like that. Being out of the Champions League, it would be a disaster because of every plan for the future. Because the future of AC Milan itself, the future of the player whose this situation is not defined, not sure. So, it's very, very important and very relevant for us to be capable to qualify for the next Champions League. I am, as I said, I am 7 on 10 confident about it because we are 5 points ahead Napoli, if I'm not wrong. We are ahead in the chart with the Napoli for like scontri diretti. I don't know how.
The tiebreaker. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, the tiebreaker.
The
we are
against each other. Yeah.
Yeah, we are ahead. So 7 on 10. I think Atalanta is in a better shape than AC Milan in this moment. At the moment, I don't think Juventus is in a better shape, but it's a far better team. It's stronger. The players in Juventus are stronger than ours, I'd say.
Yeah,
of course. And Napoli is I don't think is a very good team this season, but of course, they have players that in a certain way are better than ours. So it's a dangerous position. I really hope that AC Milan could qualify before the very last game, because the very last game is in Bergamo against Atalanta.
Yeah.
And I'm 34 years old, and I don't know if my heart will be safe in that situation. So I pray that AC Milan will qualify before that game, because it's dangerous. It's absolutely dangerous.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to come down to Milan and Napoli, because I think Atalanta, out of all these teams, is the one that's playing the best. They usually finish strong. And I think Juve, I think that win yesterday against Napoli was really pretty huge for them. Yeah, so I tend to agree with you. And certainly it's imperative for Milan, because we're going to get to it in a second. There's a lot of players this year and next year who have expiring contracts, and you need that Champions League revenue. So let me ask you this, you know, in 2020, if the season was a calendar year, Milan was the best team. But 2021 has not been the case. In your opinion, what's changed about Milan since last year?
So it was a mix. Like I think the first thing is that the mindset changed, because last year we had this underdog mentality, and that was like our stronger point in the fight in order to qualify for the Europa League last year and for the start of this season, because we were like the underdog and the surprise. So also the other teams were surprised by AC Milan, and this change of mindset, along with injuries, because injuries were lethal for us this year, and also the fact that we started this season very early, because we did like the first game of Europa League back in like September, stuff like that. We are a bit tired, I'd say. Right now we have one game per week, so no excuses from that point. But we need to win the next 2/3 games, because our season depends on those results. Because we're going to face Parma, we're going to face Genoa, and we're going to face Sassuolo. In this time, there will be Atalanta against Napoli, Napoli against Lazio, and maybe also Juventus against Atalanta. So they have tough games, and we need those 9 points. If AC Milan will earn 9 points in the next three games, I will be like 8.5 on 10 confident about the chance for the AC Milan to arrive like second or third or fourth. Cookers. I won the Champions League. It doesn't matter about second, third, or fourth. But I really hope for this Champions League, for the next Champions League. I really miss that.
I'm sure.
I really
you
miss
do.
That.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's like 10 years. I was born back in 1987, so I never spent 10 years. Out of the Champions League in my whole life. So I had a great childhood. I had a great teenage years, etc. Pretty awful 20s, I have to say, pretty awful 20s.
Yeah.
But I want, really, I have to be honest, I want badly that song. I want to hear the song. Badly. I really appreciate the Europa League game. It's very cool, but right now I really need that song, that anthem. Absolutely, I really need it.
I hear you. So let's talk a little bit about Pioli, because you know when I started our podcast, Calcioland, was right around the time he was at Inter. He had taken over mid-season, and for a while it really looked like he was turning Inter around, and you know they looked on their way back to the Champions League, and in many ways it felt somewhat similar to what he's doing at Milan now, and then it royally fell apart for him at Inter. Do you see any parallels to that, and do you think Pioli's magic run has kind of come to an end?
Well, I have to admit that there are some points that could be like the same, but the main difference is that if I'm not wrong, when Pioli took Inter, he did like 8 victories in a row.
Yeah.
So it's like 2 months or stuff like that. Here we have a period that was a year long.
Yeah.
Barely a year long. So. I'm confident that it's not a mistake, an endemic mistake by the mister, by the coach. I hope so, because I'm pretty sure that Pioli will be the AC Milan manager for the next year. It depends on him. I think that if he will miss this Champions League, There's a chance that AC Milan will change the manager, but it's really low, I think, because Zlatan Ibrahimovic is going to sign his new contract with AC Milan in this days, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic was like one of the best sponsor for Pioli. So I think that if he will remain here in Milan is because he knows that Pioli will remain the coach for the next season. So let's see. I really hope that he will be able to qualify AC Milan for the Champions League, because that was our mission since day one. Like you said, I never believed in Scudetto, because AC Milan is far behind the level of Inter right now, also the level of Juventus, because Juventus let Inter win this Scudetto with their choice, with the choice of Andrea Pirlo, with the choice on transfer market, etc. But of course, the level of Juventus is far ahead than the level of AC Milan. So. Our goal and our mission is to arrive in the Champions League. So if Pioli will accomplish that, I will be grateful with him and with Pioli for like, I think for 1, 2, 3, 4 years, et cetera, et cetera. That's because I really need the Champions League. As an individual, I really need Champions League. So, but yes, let's see. I really hope that is not a particular and an endemic thing from Pioli. Let's see.
Yeah, I hear you. So let's get to some players. I'm going to throw you a curveball. Yeah. I want to start with Leao because I find it fascinating that there is a section of Twitter that really, really gets very mad anytime something bad is said about Leao. And, you know, I think Milan have done a lot of things right on the transfer market, you know, with Maldini, Massara. But I do think Leao, and I think he's been the most expensive purchase they've had, I don't think they do that deal again. And I don't. And I think if Leao was sold today, it wouldn't be for as much as Milan paid. So let me ask you, how do you rate him compared to Paqueta, which was another pretty expensive purchase that Milan did find the taker for at Lyon? Do you kind of think Leao has been a considerably better player at Milan than Paqueta, or about the same?
So I think that the difference between the two players is that when we bought Paqueta, we hope that he will be the star of the team. While when we bought Leao, we knew that we were buying a young player that probably has a chance to become a great player, but like developing and in 2 or 3 years, et cetera, et cetera. I think that the biggest problem for Leao is the attitude and the body language. I really don't care about the body language, but I understand why there are a lot of angry middle-aged Italian fans who are shouting at Leao like, do something, you silly, etc., etc. So I understand it. I understand why, but I do not understand because I do not care about the body language of players. The attitude is another thing, because that's a problem. I hope that this year will have been like the year where he made the step up. Like with Ibrahimovic, you have the chance to become a consistent player, a solid player, a good player. And do what you are able to do on the pitch, on the field. Do it like for 3 games in a row, 4 games in a row, etc. Not like you are shining in a game and then you have 3 bad games, etc., etc. So that is a problem. But I think that also in his case, the problem this year is also injuries, etc. Not only his injuries, but the injuries of the team, because he played very well along Ibrahimovic, and when he could play on the left in his proper role, without Ibrahimovic and without Rebic, he became like the forward, the striker. But that is not his main role, and you can see that he's not very good at right now. So he had few problems this season that is not guilty about these problems, but there are something that he need to wake up, like do something or stuff like that. Talking about Paqueta, the main problem is that he played for 3 different trainers in AC Milan. He played for Gattuso, he played for Giampaolo, and he played for Pioli. He never did great except for like the first month or 2 months in Milan, like back in January 2019, maybe.
Yeah.
And then the problem was that he was, well, I have to be honest, it was terrible. He was terrible because he did everything wrong without showing any wills, any passion to play, any, okay, right now, this is my moment, this need to be my moment. No, he was like apathic, like, okay, I have to do this stuff as job, who cares, I want to play Warzone, etc., etc. So I think that Leao is better than Paquetá, or has shown something better than Paquetá. I think that right now Paquetá is doing pretty good in Ligue 1 with Lyon. But I'm happy to have Leao instead of Paquetá. This is my point of view about it.
Okay, let's talk about a player that I think is getting universally good reviews, and I think for good reason, is Tomori, who is near and dear to the producer of this podcast, Alex, a former Chelsea player. And I think Tomori's been really as good an addition as you can have in January. So what do you make of him so far at Milan? Does he remind you of any Milan player of the past?
So, I think I'm in love. I have a bit of a crush with Oluwa Fikayomi, Oluwa Damilola, Tomori. I have a bit of a crush because he's good. He's very good. He's like very fast. He's good on 1-on-1. It's far better than Romagnoli in these aspects. Far better because he's like the perfect teammate of Simon Kjær in the center of the defense, and I think that in an era where Hellas Verona could ask you 20 million for Lovato, I think that having to spend 28 million for Tomori is a deal that you have to do.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's too good. You see that, like, Manchester City every single year spend 50 million euros for a central back because Guardiola knows the importance of having two proper central backs in the defense, because they are like the first one who those who start the action, etc., the plays, and also they need to be very strong, very good, very intelligent, etc. I rate Tomori very high, and I think that is very good also for Serie A. I was happy when we had Tomori from Chelsea, but I was a bit I have some fears about the tactical aspect, etc. But he showed since day one, because like he played in the Coppa Italia derby, and he did very, very good on Lukaku, so like the worst client you can have in Serie A right now. And I'm pretty sure that if Tomori played the derby in Campionato, we never let Inter score after 5 minutes and won the game, basically. Because he's fast like Kapu. He's a big dog. He's every time he's on the ball, like, give me the ball. So I really like him. Yeah. Basically, I really like him. And talking about the passenders, we had a very good defender. And I think that an aspect that could be similar to one of the great of the past is the pace of Tomori, because he's fast as Thiago Silva. He's fast as him. I think Thiago Silva was a better defender, but because Thiago Silva was like one of the best defenders in the world back in AC Milan days. So it's not a full comparison, but the pace that Tomori is as fast as Thiago Silva. So this is very useful. Also because we like the line of our defense is almost at the midfield. So we have to run like 40, 50 meters back to our goalkeeper's line when we have to defend the counterattack. And Tomori could easily do it, and Romagnoli don't.
Yeah. I love that you bring up Thiago Silva, who in some ways took his spot at Chelsea now. So
yeah.
Interesting, yeah. There. You know, it's kind of interesting. So let's talk about the players that have contracts coming up. So obviously we have Donnarumma and Çalhanoğlu now, and next year Romagnoli and Kessié. So obviously some key players. So let's start. We'll keep Kessié separate because I kind of see him as the most interesting. But if you can only keep two between Donnarumma, Romagnoli, and Çalhanoğlu, which two do you pick?
No brain, Donnarumma and Çalhanoğlu. No brain. We can easily find another player who is better than Romagnoli. And we already have one in the team. And he's from Canada / UK, etc. So Tomori is better than Romagnoli. So no brain. Donnarumma and Çalhanoğlu, absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. So let's talk about Kessié, who obviously has had a great season and for a stretch was really pretty unbelievable there. His contract's coming up next season, and obviously the Champions League, it's not just about you hearing the song, like they need the revenues there. But in your opinion, is keeping Kessié long term even more important than giving Donnarumma a new contract now?
It's a hot take, but I say yes. I'd say yes for mainly two reasons. The first one is that finding a good goalkeeper is easier than find a great midfielder like Kessié, because I think Donnarumma is going to be the number one of the whole world talking about goalkeeper, etc. And probably Donnarumma brings like 10 or 12 points alone to AC Milan every single season. But I think that if, for example, if you have an AC Milan with Musso from Udinese as goalkeeper and Kessié in the midfield, it's far better than having Donnarumma as goalkeeper and I don't know, Meite as midfielder, for example, or another midfielder that you have to raise in order to arrive at the same level of Kessié, etc. Because the fact is that with Kessié, you have a player that who is 25 years old and have like four full years of experience as a starting midfielder in Serie A. He's, I think, one of the two, three best midfielder in the league right now, along Barella from Inter, etc. So probably I'd say Kessié for that reason. And the second reason is that Donnarumma is with Raiola. If you are with Raiola, it's a strange position. My position is strange because I really appreciate how Raiola is good at his job. He's like the best. He's like the best
one. He is.
I respect him for this because I understand that he will do everything for his players. So he's like, I appreciate his job. I respect it because he's very good.
Yeah.
At his job. But you know that if you have Donnarumma with Raiola, you will be in this trouble every single year.
So yeah, fair. Fair.
It's a fact that it's a problem for us, tifosi, and it's a problem for the AC Milan, because you cannot think about the future knowing that every year, every 2 years, etc., you have to fight with Raiola for in order to sign another contract for Donnarumma. So this is a problem.
Yeah, and look, I keep saying that I'll be very surprised if Donnarumma doesn't extend with Milan. But yeah, you're gonna go through this song and dance every 2-3 years, and I totally agree with you on Raiola, and I get why a lot of fans don't like him. But his prerogative is not the fans and even the clubs; it's his players. And yeah, I get that. So,
exactly.
So you kind of already answered this. So you don't see Romagnoli, say he goes to Juve or say he goes to another team. There's not the potential that down the road you kind of regret it, right? Do you think this is kind of his level? You seem to think he's pretty easily replaceable. Do you think a lot of it is made because he's the captain, and it had it not even been for that, maybe people wouldn't look at him kind of in the same way?
So I think that the main problem with Romagnoli is that he is basically the same player of 5 years ago, and everyone expected from him to become a different player and a far better player, and it's not completely his fault. The problem is that he was in a terrible environment, because AC Milan used to be a terrible environment. He was very young, and he was set as new captain. So I think that probably having going in on another club, another environment, for example, as you said, Juventus, probably he's going to be far. He's going to be better than this, because he was born in 1995, so he's 26 years old. He had like another 5 years or even 6 years to become a better player. So I think that probably for him going to Juventus could be very, very good, I'd say. I really hope that we are not going to have Bernardeschi for him.
I didn't dare ask you.
I think that the first mantra for every single board of AC Milan is remember to not upset the player from Juventus after Bonucci, Caldara, and Higuain. Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, and, no, no. But
you know who is? And it so happens that Raiola is the agent for both Bernardeschi and Romagnoli. So it might actually happen.
No, but
I hear you. The precedence of players coming from Juve to Milan recently have been really bad. There's no doubt about it.
No, it's
let's look
terrible.
At something though. A little bit more positive. We know, as you said, Ibrahimovic is going to sign a new contract. He'll be, you know, when he's healthy, the main guy. But, you know, as much as Raiola says that Ibra is going to play for another 10 years, you know, I don't think we can expect him to be the main striker for a while. So if you could pick out of these two, and maybe you have a name you like better, but I've been thinking a lot about these two players between Belotti and Vlahovic from Fiorentina for Milan, which of the two would you pick? And I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be.
I'd go with Dusan Vlahovic. I go with Vlahovic for many reasons. The first one is that I love the striker who is a beast, but is very good. He has good, great technique, etc., etc. So
yeah.
I really admire him. So I hope Vlahovic. The second reason is that he's perfect because he's 21 right now. He played like two seasons for Fiorentina, so he's not a rookie, but he's a sort of sophomore right now. And with Ibrahimovic, you know that there will be some games where Ibrahimovic will play. So you need a player, you need a striker that you could easily bench him. Like you go to Vlahovic and you say, okay, you are the main striker. You're going to play 40, 50 games this year, but there are some games where Zlatan will be the starter and you will come in like in the second half or stuff like that. I don't see Belotti doing stuff like that because Belotti is 28, is like the striker of Italian national team along Immobile, etc., etc. So it's harder to do something like this to Belotti. It's easier to Vlahovic. Of course, if you're going to pay 40 million for a striker, you are not going to bench him. I'm pretty sure about it. But
yeah, and even imagine, you know, like what 1 year, you know, playing alongside Ibra for a little bit would do. I knew you were going to pick Vlahovic. He has been really, really excellent. He's not as good as Van Basten, but sometimes he kind of reminds me a little bit of him when I see him play.
Yeah.
So I want to, I mean, he's, and look, Van Basten was unbelievable, and God bless Vlahovic if he reaches that level. But, you know, when you were describing Vlahovic as a player, that's right where my mind went. So I want to ask you this, because you're based in Milano, and you're all about the culture, and, you know, I would say Milan and Inter fans, you know, it's like a love-hate relationship, but it's not really that bad. You know, it's cugini, like a friendly rivalry and whatnot. So let me ask you, how it's inevitable that Inter is going to win the Scudetto. And look, it's a weird year with COVID and whatnot. But what do you think the reaction, the perception in Milano is going to be of Inter Scudetto?
I think that basically the only good aspect of this lockdown, etc., is not having Inter fans in the street celebrating his Scudetto. So the only reason why I'm not so sad about the stuff about this lockdown going like for other 2 or 3 months is this. It's only this. And so no jokes apart, the thing is that the AC Milan fans knew better than Inter fans how Internazionale would be like the most wanted team this year, like the favorite for the Scudetto. They said, no, we are behind. We are behind Juventus. Juventus is stronger, et cetera, et cetera. No. We knew from since day one that we had this problem. So AC Milan fans are facing the inevitable. Probably if AC Milan will qualify to Champions League, that would be far easier to accept the Scudetto of the other side of the city, I think.
Okay, fair. Let's close on this, Daniele, and thank you so much for your time. This was a blast, as always, talking calcio with you. There's been, you know, and I think there's a pretty good chance that Allegri is going to go back to Juve at some point. How much do you think that changes things for Juve? You know, their transfer window, you know, is going to be interesting. A lot can happen. But obviously, Allegri makes a pretty big difference. So what do you make of the potential impact he could have if he goes back to Juve? If Allegri is leading them, do you think they are almost instantly Scudetto favorites? Or is that not enough in and of itself?
I think yes, they would be like the favorite for the next Scudetto, because I think right now the roster of Juventus is the best in the league. This team is even better than the last Allegri's Juventus, I'd say, and they won the last Scudetto with a bunch of players who were hating Maurizio Sarri, etc. So I think that probably they would be the favorite with Allegri, and I also think that right now also back in August, Juventus knew that they were making a huge gamble of having Pirlo in as a coach for this year, because Inter was and is very good.
Yeah.
The main problem is that you didn't have time this particular season to make a change so big, like pass from Maurizio Sarri to Andrea Pirlo, who was not even a coach back there. So I think with Allegri, who is one of the best coaches in Europe, in the world, I think that probably Juventus will be the number one favorite for the next season. But also depends from what Inter will do. Financial situation of Inter, etc. So probably yes, but let's see.
Yeah. So before I let you go, I'm convinced that if, say, Juve get rid of Pirlo, and it's probably going to happen, maybe not during the season, but next season, my guess is he doesn't do like Inzaghi and go do the Gavetta in Serie B. Granted, Gattuso did his Gavetta before Milan. I don't see Pirlo doing that. I think if things don't work out at Juve, he just leaves coaching altogether, kind of a little bit like Ciro Ferrara. Do you agree? Or do you see Pirlo saying, you know what, I'm going to go get the experience and become a good manager?
No, I agree with you. I think he's going to no coach at all. Or if he remains coach, etc., I think he will do something like in the US or something.
Oh, interesting.
Than the regular Gavetta, I'd say, because it's a unique type of person, Andrea Pirlo. So I think he will be a perfect wine businessman, etc., not a coach. But if he decides to remain the football world as coach, I think like US or something strange.
Interesting. Well, Daniele, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. This was awesome. Definitely,
thank you, David.
Check out Vox to Box, guys. If you're learning Italian or you speak it, you will not be disappointed. And Daniele, I look forward to chatting with you again. Hopefully things improve in Italy and I can come to Milano soon. I had a blast last time I was there. So all the best, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. And let's hope for the future for this vaccine, for this situation, etc. Let's hope. Bye.